One of the annual milestone events in history is the annual New Year release of British government archives. Most of them become public after a period of 30 years. In the latest haul of documents being made public under a different timetable are papers from the Prime Minister's Office and the Cabinet Office from 1989 and 1990. They give a picture of how Margaret Thatcher's government and officials were struggling to get to grips with the rapid meltdown of communist regimes in Eastern Europe and the prospects of a united Germany. Chris Johnstone has more in this edition of Czech History.
The latest archives add to the picture about how Western governments struggled to keep pace with the fast-changing evolution of events in Central and Eastern Europe, with Poland, East Germany and Hungary leading the way, and Czechoslovakia somewhat slow to follow. Some of the picture has already come from other sources released earlier, such as the annual reports on the situation in Czechoslovakia made by the British Embassy in Prague. Richard Dunley is an historian at the National Archives in Kew, London, and explained to Czech Radio's Jiří Hošek the situation with the latest archives.
I think it's quite clear from the files that there's a perception that change is coming. And throughout this period, there's an acknowledgement that there is something happening here. I think what constantly comes out is how surprised British officials are at the pace of change. And the sort of the snowball effect, particularly in 1989, really does take people by surprise. And you see the reports going round the embassies in Eastern Europe and coming back to the Foreign Office and the Prime Minister's Office. And I think everyone is very surprised as to how quickly these events are taking place.
The latest papers are a bit higher up the chain of command than the Prague embassy. Many for the Prime Minister's eyes, and often being drafted or annotated by her chief foreign policy adviser, Charge Pohl. Not surprisingly, given West Germany's leading position in Europe and the fact that Britain and other former World War II allies still had a stake in the defence of West Germany and West Berlin, East Germany commanded a lot of attention back in 1989 and into 1990, as the possibilities for unification and its format were forged. Richard Dunley again.
The material released today is heavily focused on East Germany, with some material on sort of the rest of Central and Eastern Europe. So from that picture, you get quite a strong focus on the East German aspect. So it's difficult to gauge without having sort of seeing other bits of information that would fit into the jigsaw. But obviously the events in Hungary as well at this time are sort of clearly very significant, and the two things are feeding off each other.
Having fought two world wars against Germany, there were clearly some misgivings about Germany being united again. Those most famously came forth when Prime Minister Thatcher held an informal meeting with several top historians about the topic at her country retreat at Chequers. The leaked reports that came out afterwards gave an impression that many feared that Germans almost had a generic propensity to aggression and domination. Richard Dunley suggests the archives give the impression that the misgivings became diluted over time.
It's quite interesting. You do get an insight into what's going on with regard to the unification of Germany. And I think it does seem that there's a certain uneasiness at some points, especially early on, about the concept of reunification. But I think that very quickly fades as the sort of the realization of what's actually going on, the pragmatic concepts of what's actually happening on the ground become clear. And I think it very quickly turns around that the British are sort of very supportive of reunification from what we can see in the material here.
It's fairly well known that there was little personal chemistry between Margaret Thatcher and German Chancellor Helmut Kohl. She found him ponderous and heavy work. But the archives do reveal a personal letter from Kohl later thanking dear Margaret for her help in paving the way for unification. Whilst Germany occupied the foreground, the other Central European countries were also priorities because they were now viewed as virgin territory where the ebbing Soviet influence could be replaced by that of the West. And the archives show that the British Embassy in Prague showed some barely hidden delight in reporting at the end of 1989 that the heavy French diplomatic initiative following the earlier visit of President François Mitterrand had brought no evident result. The British had a similar agenda in what their Prague ambassador a year later described as a battle for influence, which he reckoned had been most staunchly fought. Richard Dunley again.
It's very clear that the British government saw huge opportunities in Eastern Europe in terms of sort of cultural exchange, in terms of economic exchange, in terms of trade. And they're very keen on trying to promote that as early as possible, even in terms of sort of supportive economic policies, whether it be in Germany, slightly less so, but Poland and elsewhere in Eastern Europe. They're very keen to promote these sorts of things and try and take advantage of the new situation.
14 British ministerial visits to Czechoslovakia took place in 1990, but London was also ready to roll out its heavy diplomatic artillery as well. President Václav Havel visited London in March, and in September that year, Margaret Thatcher made her first visit to the then Czechoslovakia.
She visited Czechoslovakia relatively early on in this period, and you get quite a strong sense of the sort of the real drive to promote trade, promote economic links, and even cultural links, and talking about the film that was being made of Kafka's castle and the visit of Sir Alec Guinness and Jeremy Irons coming into Prague. So they're keen to really try and push this sort of cultural connection.
The background briefing from adviser Charles Pohl ahead of the visit describes worries about the sharp rise in crime after the wide pardon given by the President Havel, the tensions between Havel and Finance Minister Václav Klaus over the direction of economic policy, and the rising tensions between Czech and Slovak politicians about the degree of federalisation that should be pursued. On a lighter note, Powell warned that President Václav Havel might overdo on the hospitality and some of his ideas for the visit. He pointed out that London had been forced to politely refuse the offer that Mrs. Thatcher's visit in Czechoslovakia take place in a red, white and blue BMW. Another problem for the preparations was what to do with Mrs. Thatcher's husband, Dennis. He was penciled in for a trip to Brno for the International Trade Fair. There were worries, though, how he might cope with the two-hour uncomfortable drive between Prague and Brno. If he went to Bratislava, it was suggested he should sit through his wife's speech to the National Assembly, but could later relax on a boat trip on the river. An effort was made to investigate other options to keep Dennis occupied and involved. While President Václav Havel was ideologically distant from Mrs. Thatcher, she was a philosophical pin-up for Václav Klaus, he did admire her for her resolute standpoints and forthright approach to politics. Prague was then giving solid support in the Gulf War, though, as Havel pointed out, unlike Britain, Czechoslovakia could not offer a navy to help out in shipping the troops. And the admiration was apparently mutual. Thatcher's programme included a meeting with the then Slovak Prime Minister Vladimir Mečiar in Bratislava. And one of the leading proponents of the breakup later of Czechoslovakia was, according to the records, then willing to give assurances that Czechoslovakia would remain a federal state. Prague Ambassador Peter Lawrence O'Keefe described the Prime Minister's visit as a triumphal progress. But he also underlined the fact that commercial relations in the country were still slow to develop, although 46 joint Czechoslovak-British ventures had been signed. There was a clear enthusiasm to learn English as well, and the popularity of the British Council was a subject for great satisfaction at the embassy. The ambassador cautioned, though, that Czechoslovakia was not a third-world country, where, quotes, we can take the Anglophone inheritance for granted. And on a slightly more downbeat note, he noted that the British Council was still fighting for the return of its former facilities in the Kaunitsky Palace in Prague. It was a battle the British were set to lose. Mrs. Thatcher herself had just two more months as head of government before a party rebellion forced her to resign. President Havel felt too embarrassed by his poor command of English to phone over his consolation and dismay over what happened. The task was passed to adviser Carol Schwarzenberg, along with the invitation to Mrs. Thatcher to make a private visit to Prague Castle whenever she wanted and for as long as she wanted. And the Prague ambassador's prediction for 1991 and beyond was that Czechoslovakia would survive the separatist Slovak strains. How wrong he was.